And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Tuesday afternoon, February 25th. I want to thank you for joining us. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And it's another mild day out there for this time of the year. I mean, we could be looking at anything from ice to snow, but nope. We've got temperatures in the 40s outside right now, so we're going to continue with this snow-melting weather, Bridget. I don't hear anybody complaining.
Okay. Actually, the only complaint I would have is probably my neighbor's, their snowman fell over. He just decided that was enough, and boom, done.
So I don't know if you saw what happened earlier this week down in, I believe it was Watertown, South Dakota. They had
a tornado. That was yesterday.
Yeah, and it was the first. Now, it hasn't been confirmed yet, I don't think, by the Weather Service, but looking at video, it was either a landspout or a tornado, but I'm sure that'll probably be confirmed as a very, very weak tornado. But that's the first time in South Dakota history that they've recorded a tornado in the month of February.
So. From what I saw from a couple of storm chasers, it has been confirmed as a landspout.
It has.
But nonetheless... Okay. So what constitutes that? What major shifts in weather patterns went from we're freezing our ears off to is that a tornado on the horizon? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a rarity, but the conditions were right. They had a vigorous upper level system pull through South Dakota, and there was just enough spin in the atmosphere to produce that. It even produced a little bit of pea-sized hail along with that as well. So and like you said, to go from 30 below to a week later, you're looking at an isolated tornado. You try to wrap your head around it and say, no, you got to be making that up. But yeah, it's been crazy weather.
Oh, there were several places, some storm chasers. There was also, just news outlets from South Dakota had a lot of video of it that they've been showing. And it's a kind of a neat situation to say that you saw that. We've had them in North Dakota in the month of November. So it's not unusual once we get into what we would think late winter or in our fall season to actually still see tornadoes. And if we want, I'm sure all of you can find video footage of it. If you needed me to go look for it, I follow several folks on Twitter who had it up
right
in the last 24 hours.
And I had a couple emails, Bridget. You know what they were blaming this on?
If you say chemtrails, I'm shutting this off.
That's exactly what the email said. I quickly told them that wasn't the case, but I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Yeah.
As one of our regular listeners, John, would say, I can see the look on her face. That doesn't look like she's getting a kick out of it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We do have some mild weather that's continuing through today and actually for the next few days as we have above normal temperatures that will continue to kind of blanket themselves over the area. Today, we're going to top out about 44. Not going to see much more sunshine for the rest of the day as those clouds have thickened up. There's a weak weather system out to our west, giving a few sprinkles out around the Bismarck area. That's moving eastward, so can't rule out an isolated sprinkle as we head towards evening with south winds about 10 to 20. An isolated sprinkle or shower early this evening, then that pushes east into Minnesota, but lows tonight around 30. And then Wednesday, breezy, a little bit cooler, but still above normal. Well, northwest winds 10 to 20 and highs in the upper 30s. And then we're right around 40 on Thursday, but Friday, that's the big changing day, if you will. We'll start out the morning in the 30s and then sharply fall and quickly as we head into the afternoon down into the 20s with a strong north wind gusting over 30. We'll have wind chills in the single digits by Friday evening. So Friday's going to be a drastically different day. No snow along with that. It's a strong clipper system, and it is going to bring snow from northern Minnesota, northeast Minnesota, into the UP of Michigan. So if you want fresh powder, some of those areas could pick up 6 to 10 inches of snow in the UP of Michigan, but that's going to drag down the cold air for us, dragging us down into the 20s on Saturday, but then warming us right back up into the low 40s Sunday, upper 30s to low 40s Sunday, and then mid to upper 40s on Monday. And then after that, I think we kind of mellow things out for much of next week, cool it down a little bit, but still remain above normal with temperatures generally in the 30s most of next week. Still no big storms on the horizon, and according to the LRC, we weren't expecting any. Remember I said we'd see a couple of clippers come through. Some, you know, we could have one or two strong ones. This one on Friday is a strong one, but luckily we're on the, for the most part, on the warm side of that, and all the precip is off to our north and east. And although we could use the precip, boy, there's just not a lot in the forecast. But again, after about the 7th to 10th of March, after that time frame, that's when we do start to see us go into the stormy part of the LRC cycle. And it's fun watching the models now because we know what's going to happen as we head into mid-March. And now some of our longer-range models are just starting to pick up on that, that we may or that they're hinting at stormier conditions. So that will occur. Now, the question is it going to be rain or snow? It's going to be a pretty fine line, I think, across the state. There will be some areas that get quite a bit of snow and some areas that could get quite a bit of rain. So we'll keep an eye on that as we head towards mid-March. So we got a few weeks to deal with that. So enjoy. Let's enjoy the nice mild weather while it's here.
As a recap, you said we're going to have a clipper on Friday, but for those who are heading to the airport Saturday morning, you're going to be fine. Those planes are not going to be delayed, right, Dean? I know a lot of folks that are in that situation.
They will not. No, you'll be fine. In fact, winds will start to calm down by Saturday morning. What's everybody heading Saturday morning? What's the big getaway?
Apparently, everybody wants to get to Commodity Classic for that farm show. Why wouldn't you head out to Denver?
That's right. Are you leaving this weekend?
Uh-huh. All yep, right. I'll be down in Commodity Classic. The only concern I have about Denver is it's probably another city where I can't inhale too deeply or I'll never be able to get a CDL again. So just have to keep that in mind.
It's not that bad there, is it? If you get
have
the
you
temperature
in New Orleans?
If you get the temperature inversion, yeah, right? Yeah. Well, I suppose.
I don't know. Those people have hit a lot of skunks with their cars down there. My goodness. Yeah. And this weather update.
Oh, I get it. Wow, that took
Ryan
me a while.
Bonsack. I can't wow. believe it took you this long. Listeners at this point are like, really? Really? So, anywho, Ryan Bonsack, Equitable AgriFinance. He is helping farmers restructure their balance sheets and, of course, provide working capital. He wants to work with you as a rancher or a farmer in this region. Give him a call, 701-261-6529. That is Ryan Bonsack with Equitable AgriFinance. Easy to find, great guy to work with. Let me know if you have any problems reaching out to Ryan. I'll be glad to help. Have you recovered now that you finally caught on to my inside joke?
I think I'm the only one that didn't get it. Addison's in there laughing.
It was only a matter of time. You'd get it eventually.
It's only a matter of time.
I believed in you.
No, I could practically see the squirrels running on the little treadmill in his head. Right. So close. All right. So I also want to just recap a few headlines that have been going on that we haven't gotten a chance to visit about yet. One of them has to do with a new product idea that's come to fruition for fertilizer. Okay, so there's a team at a company called Redox Bionutrients. There's a big difference in what we've traditionally done for fertilizers and pesticides because they were synthetically produced, meaning that we produced them in a factory. They were active ingredients that were brought together. They had carriers on them. All sorts of things happened in that chemistry process. Now we are seeing a tremendous buildup in a category of biologicals. There can be biofertilizers, biostimulants, biopesticide. And that means that the product has more naturally occurring items in it. Redox Bionutrients has been working on a biostimulant. So this is a plant stimulant that's a biological that has a complete change of perspective on how plants use applied nitrogen. We recall nitrogen gets used in the plant cycle for best growth. We use nitrogen up here pretty much in all of our crops. We have some crop that is a better nitrogen giver and leaves it behind in the soil, or a nitrogen user. Corn is a good nitrogen user. Now, what they're finding with Redox is this bionutrient product enhances what's going on by using botanical extracts. Botanical extracts in a liquid formulation that's applied with synthetic nitrogen. So if you took your dry nitrogen, which we use as a granular fertilizer, and you were able to apply this liquid to it, what their claim is that you could optimize your nitrogen by 50%. That means you could reduce your rate by 50%, which could cut costs on the fertilizer and then move towards using this biostimulant. That's a huge claim. We never talk about reducing rates in fertilizer if something's not proven. So it'll be interesting to see if this company is in fact a commodity classic, and if they can show that if they're seeing an 80% win rate compared to treated and untreated using 200 units of nitrogen in corn. I'll be very curious what that looks like, and I bet a lot of our farmer listeners might be as well. So I'll see what I can find out and report back. But if we could use a biostimulant along with fertilizer and reduce rates, we'll see what that leads to economically and for other inputs as well.
Sounds like a win-win. How many people?
It could if it works out.
All right. How many people are they expecting out there in Denver for this?
Oh, well, I think there's already 7,000 people registered. They'll easily see 8,000 folks, 9,000 people that show up for the event. So it's good size. There's a lot going on there.
Okay.
Yeah. And that'll be starting Sunday afternoon, Monday and Tuesday. Well, before we get to that, before we head on out to Denver next week, we certainly want to spend a little time with Steffes Group, and we're going to be joined by Brad Olstead here on our next segment. We're going to talk about the equipment auction business right now because they've got some upcoming sales. I already got their listing up on my computer so I can see what they're doing, and I've got several questions for Brad about what's going on in the equipment market these days. He is our expert. So when we return, we'll have Brad Olstead, the Steffes Group, joining us. Have your questions ready, 701-293-9000. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us, and especially thanks for being here for our segment on the auction block with Steffes Group. And we are joined by Brad Olstead. He is a, I don't want to say long time, but let's say experienced auctioneer and a specialty in machinery as well. Brad, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Ann. Thank you for the kind words. At the office, I'm known as the old guy, so I do appreciate the kind words.
Please tell them not to refer to you as that. It's nothing but wisdom on your part, Brad. I'm well aware of that.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. You've got some auctions coming up. I was cruising your website here earlier looking at some of them. One thing caught my eye, and you have an auction closing on February 26th, so that'll be tomorrow. And it says, we're excited to announce a new format to our bi-monthly online Steffes auction. Can you tell me what the new format is or what's going on with that?
Well, basically, for your listeners, we've spent a lot of time and effort trying to improve our website and the online auction experience. And we've made a lot of changes to make it easier to use. With our search function, we are basically not only an auction company, but we're a tech company. And all of the data that we acquire from all of our sales that we do throughout the country provides a wonderful opportunity to somebody that's either looking to sell equipment or to purchase equipment and using some of that search functions as far as finding out where the market is.
Well, speaking of finding out where that market is, what do you see things happening as we head into spring? Do you feel like the secondary equipment market is still holding pretty strong if I'm a seller? And how does that respond if I'm a buyer right now?
Well, it's a great question, and I get that asked a lot. The last couple of weeks, we've been doing some Lunch on Us events where we're talking with lenders, and we're also talking with producers. A lot of people are doing their cash flows and their year-end reviews. And, of course, we all know that this equipment market is trending lower. But my professional opinion is that the bottom is in. With production agriculture, it's all tied to interest rates and commodity prices. And we all know that we were blessed with a very good crop last year. It's just that the commodity prices in our marketing probably wasn't to the best of everyone's intentions last year. And also the equipment manufacturers, they see that. New equipment sales are forecasted for 2025 to be down between 25 to 35%, some a little higher. There's talk of factories shutting down for 1, 2, maybe 3 months. The price of new machinery is not going to decrease. They're just not going to produce it. So that's going to tighten up the used inventory. For you folks that are thinking about selling, we think the market is still holding very well. We just did a farm retirement sale today that closed, and we were 12% higher than pre-sale estimates. So they're still optimistic out there. Springtime of the year, the weather's breaking, and we're staying positive as far as the auction business is concerned.
And Brad, you said that you think it's hit the bottom in terms of where we're at right now. How confident are you of that? Because with the new administration and the economy kind of still a lot of question marks on it, I guess my question is, how much does weather play a factor? Knowing that in this upcoming spring and summer, at least the indications that we're getting for the northern and central plains is that drought conditions should be easing and we should see, for the most of us, plenty of precip. Does that how much does that play into a factor?
Well, I think weather plays into a lot. And, you know, in production agriculture, it's anybody's guess. We all think that we have an idea. We do our research. We kind of think, okay, is it going to be an early spring? Just look at our last 10-day weather pattern. We were how many? Below zero last week, 36 below, and now we're touching 50 degrees. So welcome to North Dakota and the great north. But in answering to your question in regards to the bottom, we did an enormous amount of activity late last fall. Okay, commodity prices have rebounded some, and we always take that into consideration. Also, there's going to be another payment coming to these producers that's scheduled to be released in March. That's going to improve some of the cash flow positions that are out there. And, you know, when people are buying a high-dollar piece of equipment, some of the new stuff that was sold 2022, 2023, 2024, that was discounted the heaviest, okay? Mm-hmm. But we had such a strong growth in new prices of new machinery. I mean, 8 to 10 to 12%. Well, when you start talking an $800,000 piece of machinery and it's going up 12%, that's a significant. So that's where we saw the biggest adjustment was on the late model. And we've sold enough of it now where we feel like we've hit the bottom. And also because of the new equipment sales that are being not happening, and they're just nobody's ordering new equipment, we see that tightening up. So when that inventory tightens up, prices then seem to stabilize. And what I'm telling everybody that's talking, if you have the ability and the cash flow to purchase a piece of equipment, it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for you because 3 years from now, that same piece of equipment will not lose any value. History repeats itself. This happened back in the 2012-2013 timeframe, and we have a chart and a graph at the office, and it's tied directly to commodity prices and interest rates. It's just unbelievable, the data that we've been able to put together and try to predict where this farm equipment market is going. We haven't seen any discounts in land rents. Farmland sales have been very strong. The equipment has probably had the biggest adjustment, but well-cared for equipment is still holding its value. It truly is.
Brad, you know, back in 21 and 22, as we were in the throes of the pandemic and equipment manufacturers were not building as at the height of their line because they had a lot of people that were out of the factories. We were way behind in bringing in import products, et cetera, or import components. And at that point in time, probably the highest, fastest selling rate was some of the older equipment that folks could work on their own, didn't need enough, as many electronics, et cetera. Has that changed? Are we focused more on the new equipment that's been heavily discounted versus the older equipment that we can work on more ourselves?
Well, what you're saying is basically the technology part. There's still a pent-up demand for pre-def, anything to do where the farmers can work on it themselves. I know there's litigation as far as some of the manufacturers not giving out their software so these producers can fix their own equipment. I will tell you, though, that attention to the new tech, these high-speed planters, The See and Spray, the technology that's out there with some of these newer pieces of equipment, it does truly present an opportunity for producers to cut costs. You know, our windows of putting in a crop are getting narrower and narrower. It seems like with harvest, the same thing that happens. And when you can say, like, for instance, a high-speed planter that has accuracy, that has just all of the bells and whistles on it, you can go from 4.5 miles an hour to 8.5 miles an hour and still have a wonderful plant stand. Some of those technologies are really being sought after. But like the older tractors, the tractors that are pre-def, some of the trucks, the older trucks that are pre-def, that market is still very, very strong just because of the desirability of it. It's so expensive to repair these days.
Absolutely. So last question for you, Brad. Any highlights of upcoming auctions that you've got going on or anything you want to make sure folks are checking out at Steffes Group?
Well, I just encourage everybody to go to our website and check it out. Like I said, our tech team has done a wonderful job putting on this new platform, our new website. I'm just so proud of everybody that's been involved. It's way above my pay grade, but I just love to sell this equipment. We have like the Kibble equipment auction that's going to be closing on Monday. Very, very nice lineup of late model John Deere equipment. We got farm retirements. We got the Southern Red River Valley auction. We got a lot of producers that are selling their equipment using the auction method of marketing. They feel like they're getting more net dollars to them. And then when they go out to purchase, they're buying straight out. So their discounts are being realized on a straight out purchase. So we have a wonderful opportunity this spring. We got land, we have equipment. And if you're interested in selling, interested in buying, just give us a call. I don't want to sound like a commercial, but the ag deal is still okay. I'm just wanting to reassure everybody out there. Sometimes we get a little negative Nelly out there as far as when we talk about prices and things like that. But these guys that are in the field that are putting in a crop, livestock producers are doing very well. It's still an excellent opportunity to purchase.
There is nothing in you that's a negative Nelly, Brad. There's no way. So thanks for spending some time today to talk with us. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks. Take care.
All right, folks. Bottom of the hour news has arrived. And after that, come on back. Dean and I have more headlines and weather for you. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And if you haven't had a chance to call Nate at JLA Insurance, now is the time. His phone number is 701-371-0311. He's not only an insurance owner, but a farmer on the family farm near Grandin, North Dakota. His insurance roots run very deep in North Dakota fields, and he knows what you're looking for in crop or hail insurance because he's a farmer too. So give him a call. He's not going to sell you what you don't need, and he's going to come to your door to help with you. And again, you can reach him at 701-371-0311. So, lots of things going on in the ag world these days. One of those is University of Minnesota is hosting some workshops, and they're talking about not just chemistry methods to control weed like water hemp, but a whole pile of different opportunities to do it. When it comes to water hemp, this is a plant that, as it's been tested for potential resistance strategies, it ranks very high in its ability to be flexible and to become more resistant over time. So it currently has resistant populations to the chemistry Raptor, also glyphosate, and there's potential for resistance there. They're seeing it in about 25-50% of the population to products that you normally use on your farm like Callisto, Flexar, or Atrazine. There's a little bit of resistance to dicamba and 2,4-D, but so far none to Liberty, also known as glufosinate, in the market. So how do we protect ourselves from the potential of resistance with water hemp to so many of our chemistries? Because we know that that's happening in other states like Illinois and Indiana, they're seeing upwards of 7 different modes of action with the potential resistance. So cultural practices can help us. One of those is planting those soybeans early. We are seeing more farms putting their soybeans in ahead of their corn, which has traditionally been the opposite. Corn got planted first. Also, we are looking at narrower row spacings, bringing those in tighter. That can lead to earlier canopy closure. It shades out the weed competition, and there's less potential for late season germination with water hemp. What that does do, though, is the weather will play an impact. And if we have wet, humid days, we can see an increase in white mold, which would drive more fungicide use in those soybeans. So think about how you can change your rotations, a difference in planting dates, row spacings, even tillage practices can help make a difference. And we used to till all the soybeans in the area. Doesn't quite happen the way it used to. So maybe down the road, we'll get back to doing a little more tillage, but that's going to really depend on the needs of the area and what our moisture conditions are going to be. And Dean, I've been watching several meteorologists across the country already giving a perspective that they think we're going to have drought conditions over the summer months. I don't know if you've looked ahead that far yet or not, but there is discussion that it's a possibility.
For parts of the north, for what parts of the country? For our part of the country?
The primary Midwest and here where we're at in the greater northern plains.
Okay. And according to the LRC, there's going to be pockets of it. One pocket would be southwest Minnesota. There's going to be another pocket out in western part of North Dakota. But I think in general, we should be looking at precip pretty close to normal through spring and into early summer. Now, mid to late summer, that might be a little different. But spring into early summer looks okay from this standpoint.
Well, the cold weather that we have had can also have an impact on a number of the plants we've got out in our yard. We're actually going to be joined tomorrow by Don Kinsler, so get all those plant and flower questions ready. But one thing that we do know is when it comes to the annual plants that we put out. So think about most of your garden plants, your petunias, your marigolds, etc. Those are annuals. They're going to die back before the winter happens, but they will leave their seeds behind. And many of their seeds have already adapted to the extremely cold temperatures we just came out of. If the seeds were drier and didn't have a lot of moisture in them, there's a good chance that they will continue to germinate come spring. The higher the moisture content, the more water that could be in the seed, and that would potentially freeze, wreck the seed coating, and not allow that plant to germinate. There are herbaceous perennials that are to come back every year, and there's always some dormancy that come with them. Those plants prepare for winter by pulling up water from their leaves. That's what makes the leaves fall off the plant, sucked all the moisture out of them. And then that water goes into the root system where it's converted into a sap and sugar, and it resides between the cells. Some plants make this a type of antifreeze. So the sugar, the salt, or other components in their cells decreases their freezing point so the plant doesn't freeze. So all you gardeners out there are now thinking, which plants might that be? Which ones are going to come back or not? But even with all these biological methods, it's just not a guarantee that plants will survive all season. When you've had extreme temperatures like we just did, that cold injury can occur, and we may not have an opportunity for recovery, especially if you've had rabbits, deer, etc., hurting your plants. And we get a lot of rabbits chewing on things in the winter months around here, and the young bucks go up and want to rub on the trees. And they will just destroy some young trees. It's rather disgusting. Maybe I need to have Game and Fish join us one day to talk about how many more of those we can eliminate, at least the ones that all seem to think they should overwinter in my backyard. I don't need those guys around. They should be gone. Oh, my. So yesterday we talked about the honeybee wrestling. So now one of the reasons that I want to tie that into a recent report that came out of North Dakota State University is because honey is still one of our number one produced products here in the state of North Dakota. And if you think about our economic highlights, honey production is certainly one of them. But overall, agriculture's share of our economy, when it comes to crop production, about 52% of what we do in the agricultural economy in the state comes from producing a crop. That's the sales, the income, the expenditures of growing grains, oil seeds, and everything else. Livestock is a completely different category. And when you look at our livestock production, that makes up about 8%. We have a lot of room to change and grow our livestock production in this state. Now, what share do we do of the state's overall gross business volume as an agricultural industry? We're at least 25%, but we also employ about 21% of the people. And we are 21% of the labor income. So just when you think you don't know that agriculture is a big part of our world, It really is. It affects at least 25% of all the business in this state. And that's really just a small percentage if you start adding on all the supplemental items that attach to it as well. It's pretty neat. This report was just recently done by North Dakota State University, the Department of Ag Economics and Applied Sciences. We actually will have Greg Lardy, who is the Joe and Norma Peltier Vice President for Agriculture. He is going to be joining us in early March, so I believe that's even early next week. He's going to talk about this report and all the things that came from it, industry highlights, how it was presented to the governor's office, etc. So there's a lot going on with these. Now, before I forget, I want to make sure to touch on the fact that I'm still looking for assistant ag directors. I've got March lined up. I've got some applications pending, but if you are a student somewhere in high school, from high school sophomores through sophomores in college, and you have an interest in agriculture, 4-H, FFA, any of those types of things, and you are curious about the radio industry, we'd love to have you join us for a day. You can be on air with Dean and I as we interview guests, also ask questions about our headlines of the day, kind of help us out in all those general respects. And honestly, I've got to say, we haven't had a miss yet. Those kids have been excellent that have been coming to join us.
We've been lucky. We've been lucky so far, right?
Good. Well, we're not gonna choose someone who could freeze up, but the kids we've had, and I say kids, you know, this is anywhere from high school sophomores to college sophomores, they've come with outstanding questions. They've been engaged in what we're doing and really are getting that behind the scenes look. Even if your future doesn't mean you're going to be in radio or media, that doesn't mean that the opportunity to spend a day as an intern with us wouldn't be a great one. And I've got applications for folks to fill out. You just have to send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I will be happy to share that. In fact, if you want to look at what students have done who have participated, all of those videos are on our live stream on our Facebook page, or under Weather and Ag in Focus, or on our YouTube page, as well as Acres TV. So a lot going on with all of those. Goodness. Probably feels like about the right time for us to catch up just a little bit on a break, but we've got more weather and headlines to come. I'm sure Dean's got plenty of things to throw out to us about what's upcoming over the weekend and more when we come back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:50 in the afternoon, and temperatures are in the low 40s outside. A lot of clouds around, and might see a few sprinkles before the day is done. But again, nothing to write home about. That's for sure. A couple of things I want to hit on here, Bridget. So I know you said something about, and I heard about this too, on the news about there's some counties in Illinois that are, I don't know how they're going to pull this off with the legislature, but a couple of ag counties in Illinois that are considering moving state boundaries into Indiana. And I'm guessing, was that in the, that was in the northeastern part of the state, or I could be way off?
Well, I think it's going to be bigger than that. So if somebody wants to go find their state map of Illinois and Indiana, that will probably help it fuel this discussion. So what's going on is the Speaker of the Indiana House of Representatives wants to give these citizens in the counties in Illinois the opportunity. So what they have done is they've introduced the Indiana-Illinois Boundary Adjustment Bill. It's faced a committee hearing, and then it's going to a House vote, and it ultimately could become law. So what this could establish is this adjustment commission. Doesn't mean it would happen right away, but there would be a commission formed in order to investigate. The purpose of the commission is going to decide if it's advisable to recommend the boundary shift or not. It started when 7 counties looked at the idea, and they approved non-binding referendums just this past November to explore secession from Illinois. After that, a total of actually 33 counties had similar referendums that have happened since 2020. So there's a lot of interest. 33 counties leaving the state of Illinois for Indiana makes up nearly 23,000 farms, wow, 7.7 million acres of farmland, and over 27% of the agricultural sales in the state of Illinois.
Now, how in the world would that pass? That's my question. How would that pass their legislature there?
I think you'd be surprised. Remember, this discussion has been happening in southern Minnesota with Iowa as well. If you have voters in those areas that have that intent, they're going to talk to their legislative bodies to see if it's a possibility. Indiana is much more favorable when it comes to their tax climate than Illinois is. And frankly, there's a lot of rural areas in Illinois that are just tired of being dragged through the mud because of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
They've kind of had enough. They want out of that area. And, you know, when I talk with some of my friends from Illinois, one gal always says, when you talk about North Dakota, you are proud of it. You are proud of your agriculture. You are proud of your state's history and the things that you do. We aren't like that in Indiana. We're not actually all that proud of what happens here.
You mean Illinois?
And that's a sad statement. I'm sorry, Illinois.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a sad statement that you're not proud of what your state does, and you are mostly known for your illegal government activities than you are anything else.
Well, I mean, I grew up outside of Chicago, and I'll agree, it never used to be like that back in the 80s. And mm-hmm. a lot of that, I think, does go down to politics and dragging.
Sure. Corruption.
Dragging, you know, like I said, the farmers through the mud and just making things harder for them. So, I mean, politics has always been dirty in Chicago, but it's become statewide, unfortunately, in that what used to be a great state.
How many governors have had to go due to corruption charges? And wasn't there a statistic, something like the last 5 governors left office to go to jail? So
that sounds about right.
That's maybe not it's not maybe a good feeling.
No.
For many.
No.
So I look at this as it's quite the change in opportunity for the state of Indiana. And if that starts to happen, if you think about the border between Indiana and Illinois, what does that do when Minnesota decides to make a shift? Right? If Minnesota and Iowa do something like that, does there become talk of some of the border counties between the Dakotas and Minnesota? I've always said most of Montana thinks they're North Dakota until you get to Glasgow. And I say that because of the farming practices and the reliability on research from the land grant universities. So all things are possible. You just never know where folks might decide to make that kind of a move, but it would be interesting. And again, if that were to happen, this is based on 2022 statistics. Indiana would gain from those 33 counties in Illinois, 23,000 farms, 7.7 million acres of farmland, and 27% of agricultural sales coming out of Illinois. That's a lot of change, and especially in the tax rolls. So we'll see if they actually get to that point.
And we've got Greg on line one here. He wants to talk about the Illinois seceding to parts of Indiana. Greg, what's on your mind?
Yeah, here's a jab at Illinois. Illinois, do you know why Illinois's got such modernistic and extravagant prison system?
Why is that?
Because most of the legislatures know they're going to end up being there.
Oh, that's not actually off. That's not wrong.
That's not far from the truth. I think the last hey, Greg, thanks for your call. Thanks for the joke. That was good. I think the last good governor that was farmer friendly and just friendly to the state of Illinois was Jim Thompson, and that was what he served 14 years from the late 70s into the early 90s. And since then, it seems like the corruption has been the norm there. So it kind of makes sense on why. But that wouldn't have to go. They would have to realign the state lines and just, that would be just, seems like a total mess. I could understand why they want to, but to get that pushed through, I would think would be more difficult. Maybe not, though.
Well, it depends. Yeah. Are you going to base it on a political decision or an economic decision? Because economics will likely win.
Right.
That will be different. But also, you know, when I say 23,000 farms, I don't mean 23,000 individual farmers. The definition in those I states of a farm is anytime somebody buys a chunk of land, they say, well, I bought a farm. So they might have only bought a couple, 3/4, but they're identifying it as a separate farming enterprise. So a lot of that goes also back to what they're doing when it comes to crop insurance, their work with governmental policy at FSA, the Farm Service Agency, et cetera. So in a way, that sounds a little bit misleading, but that's 33 counties. 33.
Wow.
Granted, most of their counties are not nearly as big as ours, but it makes a difference.
Right. So, yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Well, let's do a quick recap of the weather here, because we do have the mild weather continuing for the area with temperatures currently at 40 degrees. In fact, right around that 40 degree mark through much of the area. We'll go up a few more degrees. Might see a few sprinkles move in from the west as we head into the evening hours. But other than that, we're not expecting much. And then tomorrow, we're looking at temperatures in the upper 30s, a little breezier out of the northwest, back to about 40 or so on Thursday. And then it turns sharply colder on Friday. Friday, it's going to feel like we're back in winter mode, but it won't last long as we'll warm back up for the latter half of the weekend. So for Bridget, myself, want to thank everybody for joining us on Weather and Ag and Focus. Don't go anywhere. Hey, Jay Thomas is finally back from vacation. Jay Thomas show is coming up next.